Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the MMQB Week in Review on the MMQB NFL podcast feed. This is our Friday show. We took a couple weeks off, but we did this earlier in the offseason before our schedule was moved around by the draft and some other things. But the idea is to bring in the whole gang on Fridays and talk about some of the things that have been keeping us busy. So I'm Mitch Goldich. I'm here with Albert Breer, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Hey, what's up, Mitch?
Mitch, I'm a little bit bummed that we changed formats and now I can't see how your beard is coming along.
Yeah, we need an update.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, we have a new format here. And I suggested we do a Google Hangout at the same time. And then our producer, Shelby, said he was worried that might cause an echo with the new program that we're using. So I'll have to text you a photo on our group text. But the beard is coming in. I'm feeling pretty good about it. I've crossed the 2-month threshold. So thanks for asking, Connor.
Probably more worried that it would just distract us. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. All right. So we're going to talk about some of the things we've been doing, but I like to start this, as we have in the past, with whatever we've been doing. I think this started as something we watched on TV, and we've talked about things that we've read, and then I think that morphed into just things we've done to keep busy. But why don't we go around the horn and just everyone can share one thing you've done to keep busy since we last talked, because, you know, this is obviously, these are crazy times for a lot of people, and we've had the NFL to distract us, and the draft and the schedule release did that. But a lot of people are looking for recommendations on books and movies and TV and other activities around the house. So let's go around. Albert, do you want to go first? What have you been keeping busy with?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it can be the boring one and just say that I've watched what everybody else has watched, which is The Last Dance. And for me, like, that's, I don't know, it's like pretty nostalgic because it's right when I was in high school. And so, you know, 96, 97, 98, that's sophomore, junior, senior year for me. And yeah, it's been kind of cool reliving all of that. And, you know, it's confirmed that the 90s were the coolest time to grow up. You hear the music, the sports, everything about it was just perfect. And I know you guys, have probably been watching. Like, I felt like going into this whole thing, like that, I felt like the way Jordan would be digested and like kind of like the way that we'd all process Jordan might be a little different. I don't know about you guys. Like, I almost like him more than I did before. Just watching the way he kind of operated and the way he lifted people up and, you know, sort of the zero sum game he played, how competitive he was. I don't know. I like him more than I did before, and I liked him plenty before all of this.
Yeah, it's been good. I've read some of the criticism about the fact that his production team was involved, and so is it really? You know, the Ken Burns had criticism about it, but like, it's pretty easy to put that aside. And when it's on TV, just to watch it and enjoy it for what it is, and get entertainment out of it. And I'm with you. I'm younger than you, obviously, but I'm old enough to remember watching him when I was a kid, and it's definitely been fun. There's been a lot for me that I've remembered that I saw at the time but didn't know as much of, and then some stuff that has been new to me. So it's definitely been fun. Do any of you guys, I'm sure this question has been asked before, but is there an NFL figure that any of you would like to see a similar 10-part doc about?
Oof. I mean,
Adam Vinatieri.
I'm just trying to think, like, well, would it be a team or a single player?
Could be either.
So the 90s Cowboys would probably be, like, it's just as far as, like, what you'd want to, like, get behind the curtain on. It'd have to be the 90s Cowboys, I think, right?
Well, if you actually had full access, right. I would like to see the final chapter of the Patriots dynasty.
Yeah. If you had that full access. That's
fair. You could do it the same way where you key in on the final season, but then use the rest of the doc to go back and talk about what led up to it. Yeah, that would be a good one.
I'd like a 10-part documentary on why the Falcons decided to wear those god-awful uniforms this year. I want to go from the beginning to the end. You know,
we will get to the uniforms. So, Connor, we're going to be talking about your uniform rankings. But first, what everyone else has been up to. Jenny, did you have a fun week here? What's going on with you? I think I know what you're about to tell us about.
Oh, well, I'm actually going to save that for the end of the show as one good thing, Mitch.
Oh, okay.
But what I will say that I did was I built a Lego set. My mom gets me a Lego every year for Christmas. So I had a couple that I just hadn't built. So this was good time to do so. And I built the New York skyline And there was the Freedom Tower, Empire State Building, Chrysler Building, and Flatiron Building. It was a quick build. Oh, and the Statue of Liberty. So just, you know, a little five buildings, Lego, took me back to childhood a little bit. So that was one couple hours of my weekend. I enjoyed a little Lego build, which who doesn't like that?
Nice. I'll tell you what, I've gotten back into Legos with my kids now, and it, like, Jenny, I don't know if this is your experience. It is as good a stress reliever as there is.
It's so true. You can really focus on it. And the benefit to a Lego over a puzzle, which is sort of similar, right? You focus on putting something together, but then the Lego you can kind of keep around. Like, I have my New York skyline on my windowsill, and I think I'm just going to leave it there. Whereas a puzzle, you end up having to take the pieces apart, and it's kind of like a fleeting thing. Whereas with the Lego, you know, if it's something you want to keep around. I know a lot of Legos that I built as kids were just kind of like, you play, you take it apart, you build something new. But this is the architecture series, you know, it's for like adults like me who are still like 7-year-old Lego fiends. So
well, we need a picture of this too. You're talking about my beard. This is much more exciting.
I do want to see that skyline.
Yeah. All right, I'll Jenny, send you it around.
We may have to tweet that out from the MMQB account with this podcast when the link's up.
Big accomplishment.
I'm over here putting together like Legos of like Spider-Man. Jenny's doing the New York skyline.
Well, this one is not as complicated as others, but it was fun. And I will say they got pretty creative with some of the shapes and how they came together. So
nice. Looking forward to this. All right. Send that over. And Connor, how about you? Something you've watched or read or done to keep busy?
I've kept Jenny abreast of a lot of these updates, but have gotten in heavy into adult coloring. Not adult as in like explicit, but just coloring books that are too difficult for children and involve like, you know, you need sharp pencils and, you know, you're going to do a lot of shading and there's like more complicated designs. So I've been, I got my Scenes of the Woods coloring book yesterday after a week-long delivery debacle with Amazon. And last night, very peacefully, just have been coloring in a scene with a badger. And it's been good.
Wait, you picked the badger.
The badger was the first one, yeah. I'm going to try to go in order here, but there's so many leaves, so much grass. So it's just like, you know, the hours are just flying by while I'm coloring it in.
Was the delay because it's on back order? Is all that stuff like...
Yeah, so apparently like everything that I have used as a stress reliever throughout this, and I've tried to like stay relatively natural, like chamomile tea was completely gutted at every supermarket and I had to go through like some loopholes to get that. And then I was like, okay, well maybe I'll try coloring. Everything's on back order. Everything's sold out. My pencils showed up, colored pencils showed up like smashed in the tin. And I was like, you know what? I'll deal with it, you know, and we'll get through. But everybody is ravenously, you know, combing through all of the, you know, coping mechanisms, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I got the wrong idea, too, when you said adult coloring book.
Yeah, like you got it wrong. I'm glad you clarified. If you had just said adult coloring and offered no further commentary, that would have been a little bit creepy.
Like what off ramp did you get picked that up at?
Connor's a weird guy, man. What's he doing over there?
Really open about his private life.
But yeah, right. I would recommend it. Yeah, totally.
I have not done any coloring. I have no Legos either. I have a puzzle that I have not yet put together. I've got a 1,000-piece puzzle of Lincoln Financial Field, actually, which I'm sure you'll see a picture of when it's done. Some weekend, I'll break that out. I'll give a TV recommendation. I quickly binged through season 2 of Dead to Me on Netflix. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this show. Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini. It's kind of a mystery. I don't want to spoil anything, but they're two best friends and there's mystery and there's a lot of wine drinking during the day. And it's just a very exciting show. My wife and I both loved season 1 last year and we were both skeptical that they would make a good season 2. But then it was like, okay, it's back. We got to do it. And we just knocked it out very quickly in a couple of sittings. Very good show. I don't want to say any more about it, but highly recommend it.
I watched season 1 of that. I didn't realize there was a season 2. When did it come out?
It just came out this week.
Oh, okay, great. All right. Yeah. Maybe I'll get... This is a rare TV show that I'm sort of up to date on. I mean, I'm not super behind.
No, you're not behind at all. But you can check in. The next time we do this podcast, you can let us know what you think.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Should we get into some football kind of stuff? We like to talk about what we were working on this week. That's usually the point of this podcast. Sometimes it takes us a little longer to actually get into it. Albert, should I start with you? You've written a bunch this offseason about how different teams are figuring out their way through this kind of unprecedented offseason. And you had a story Thursday in your game plan. You talked to George Kittle about his home setup. Do you want to tell us about George Kittle?
Yeah, it was interesting because I was talking with him on Wednesday night, and he was sort of going through it. And like he started talking about how he was like the idea came. I was like, when did the idea come to you? And he said it came to him in late February, and he started working on it then. And I was like, well, wait a second. Like that's before, like I personally, like, and I mean, everything runs together now, but it sort of like hit me like that's way before most people were taking this thing seriously at all. And it was actually that the way he sort of figured that he should get going on this was he and his wife, they got married last year and they had a small family wedding and they were going to have a party this year in Italy in June. And so, you know, as soon as the season ended after the Super Bowl, they're sort of starting to pay attention. Okay, what's going on over there when the coronavirus outbreak, you know, really exploded there? And as they sort of go through it, it hits him like, this is going to come here and it's going to be bad. And so he starts ordering gym equipment. And, you know, as it turns out, he told me, it's like, you know, he ordered, I think, a lat pull down machine, a squat rack, an assault bike. He ordered his wife a Stairmaster, and all the stuff that he ordered, he went back on the site like 2 or 3 days later and all of it was sold out. And so he was able to sort of create this home gym. And I think like everything else, like all of us, we've sort of like, you get into certain things in this situation over the last couple of months and maybe get like a little obsessive compulsive over certain things. And that's what this was for him, where he sort of went from having this, like this area in this, in his garage where, you know, he expanded his driveway. And so he wouldn't need to park cars in the garage anymore. And, you know, it went from just kind of like some weight equipment sitting into there in there. Now they got the rubber floors. He's going to put mirrors in and like he's going to be like a real gym. And so I thought it was sort of interesting. And he said that he plans on keeping it and he plans on continuing to work out there when all this is over. And so it's sort of interesting that way that, like, you know, players are finding different ways to make this work. And, you know, I thought what was really interesting what he said was, like, it's sort of become a competition among the 49ers players. And that makes him feel really good about where the team is because everybody's really motivated to find different ways to get their work done. And you know, he believes at least that could be the difference. Whenever the 2020 season's played from one team to the next, where teams that have guys like that, that are finding a way to get all their work done, have an advantage over guys, teams that maybe have more guys that are treating this as time off.
That's interesting. I was talking to Eric Armstead, his 49ers teammate, the other day about some community work that he's done, and he was supposed to get married in Italy in June. So he has also had, I know George got married last year, but they were going to have a party. But anyways, he also had summer plans in Italy that have gone awry and are trying to reschedule. So,
yeah. Yeah. And maybe I'll go back and ask him. Maybe Armstead's wedding was scheduled around that or something. Who knows? You know, but it's interesting. I mean, like the fact that like these players have to do different things to make it work. And I just thought like, you know, that was like over the top, you know, like over the top commitment to getting your job done. So good for George.
Yeah. My favorite detail in the story is him widening the driveway. Cause yeah. I think it's one thing to, you know, I'm sure a lot of people as this started, they ordered some dumbbells or they ordered a treadmill or a Peloton or whatever and find a place to put it. But I just like the idea that it's February and nobody else, or not nobody, but a lot of people are not yet taking this as seriously as they realize they soon will. And he's sitting there thinking, well, we better widen the driveway and make room for all this stuff because it's permanent. But then, you know, it's also, it makes you think about just the difference in lifestyle for so many of these players based on how much money they're making. And I think Everybody looks at these, and a lot of these pro athletes are making so much money and they're not going to be as affected as a lot of, you know, typical fans who are watching. But then there are also so many guys who are at the bottom of the totem pole, undrafted free agents, young players who don't have guaranteed contracts, don't have huge signing bonuses, and it's so much tougher for them to figure out what their setup is. And so,
that's a great point. Him, That's a great point. He can afford to do this because he knows, you know, probably in a couple of months, he's going to be the highest paid tight end in NFL history. So if he burns a little money doing this now, it's just an investment back in himself, where you're absolutely right, Mitch. I mean, like that, it'll be interesting to see if, like, you know, the gap between the league's best players and the guys in the fringe, maybe that widens a little bit because of this year.
I think it's also probably a little isolating for rookies. I got the sense that, you know, some of the rookies are added to group chats and stuff, but I don't believe they can join the virtual program yet. So they're probably even not sure and have less people to bounce ideas off of in terms of how they handle their preparation.
Yeah. You know what was interesting? So when I talked to Sean McDermott for a story the other day, he brought up how the Bills actually have combated that with, you know, there have been a couple of rookies that have moved in with veteran players, which I think in certain areas of the country, that's okay now. And I thought that was really interesting, where, like, he said that they didn't even ask them to do it. It just sort of naturally happened. And so there are these things that, like, you know, I think sort of like the relationships in those buildings are really important now. The people helping other people thing, you know, like, and the strength of the locker room, I think, is really, really important right now. And I think you'll probably see that bear itself out when all these teams do get back to their facilities.
Yeah, it's going to be a theme the whole offseason and possibly into the season. I mean, just nobody knows anything. Yeah. I was even thinking about, you know, people are so focused on training camp and how many days and are they going to get together. And I'm thinking maybe, you know, we don't know during the season if it's still bad or if it flares up. What if teams are only practicing or in the building 1 or 2 days a week? And what if they have all kinds of crazy restrictions just to be able to get guys on the field on Sundays? Like, you know, if everyone has to get tested on Friday and stay home Saturday or something, like, you know, this could be much longer than just a couple of months of figuring it out and being adaptable. And
so Mitch, this was brought up to me. Think about this. What if one of your quarterbacks gets it?
Yeah, I think Schefter said that during the draft when I think he was talking about the Eagles taking Jalen Hurts. I think Schefter mentioned some teams are more concerned about backup quarterback just because they know that it's possible your starting QB might just all of a sudden be gone for 2 weeks.
But if you take that to another level, you can think about this. Like, those guys spend a lot of time together. Say you have three quarterbacks in your roster. What if one has carried it? What if one's carrying it around for a week? I mean, chances are the other two probably get it, right? Like, what happens then? It's just like,
right,
there are all these like sorts of things where you, it's problematic for, you know, in a lot of different ways.
And if somebody on your team has it, is that enough to quarantine the whole team for 2 weeks? That's the other question.
Right.
Yep. Well, now we're getting in a tangent. We've got months and months to see. I mean, nobody knows anything. And Albert, you've mentioned this a million times. The NFL is lucky in that some of the other leagues are going to come back first and they're going to learn a lot, because baseball, it seems like they're plowing ahead to try and get started. I know a lot of players are against it, and the NBA is trying to come back with the playoffs. So the NFL is going to see a couple of test cases before they're actually in the building or on the field.
Yeah, there's definitely, I would say there are some teams that are in favor of the idea of looking at pushing the season back a month, because they feel like they'll be able to do a better job of collecting data on what's happened in the other leagues. And so, like, you know, baseball, for example, might be more applicable in certain ways to football than basketball or hockey, because basketball and hockey, like, both those sports are just restarting and then they're gearing up to go for whatever, 6 weeks, right? Where baseball is actually starting from zero, the same way football is going to be starting from zero. And so I know there are some teams that are looking at this and saying, why don't we just start in October? That way we'll get whatever it is, 6-7 weeks watching baseball, observing baseball, seeing the mistakes they make before we start training camp. I think it does make sense when you think about it that way.
Well, Albert, Connor and I on an episode of the Weekside podcast this week cracked the hidden schedule contingency plan.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I like
this. Some cross promotion too.
The Giants Cowboys game this year is week 5. However,
I see.
Yep.
I see where you're going.
What if week 5 is intended to be week 1?
So then you have the traditional Giants Cowboys opener in week 1, which is just masquerading around right now as week 5.
That's correct. That's exactly it. I mean, it's hard to argue. You just move the first 4 weeks, tack them on to the end, the first 4 bye-less weeks. I mean, I don't know. I think we may have cracked the code.
That's if we really want the country to feel like everything's getting back to normal, nothing would be more normal than Cowboys and Giants.
Is it on Sunday night? Is it Sunday night?
No.
They can move it.
It's a 4:25 p.m. game. But, you know, it's also the day before my birthday. I'm looking at it now. So October 11th.
There you go.
The Jason Garrett Bowl, which, by the way, is taking on a new meaning now since apparently he's an offensive genius again. When did that happen? That's been an interesting last few weeks where we've all been like, oh, God, what a horrible hire that was. His offenses were terrible until they got the new offensive coordinator. Now it's like, no, the offenses were always good with Jason Garrett. Now the Giants are going to be good. I missed the storyline.
Connor, you're missing the storyline entirely. This is going to be Jason Garrett getting his revenge at Jerry Jones for taking away play calling 6 years
finally
ago.
Deploying offense.
The offensive struggles of the last few years weren't his fault because play calling was taken from him.
We shall see.
Well, now that we're talking about football actually being played on the field, let's move on to Connor, because I think like a quarter of the league is going to be wearing new uniforms this season, and some people might have this in their podcast feed before your story is published, but early Friday morning, Connor, you have a story going up on the MMQB ranking all of the new uniforms. The number one choice is obvious, and I think everyone who likes football agrees. But do you want to walk us through some of your other rankings and talk about how you put this list together?
Sure. I would view this as largely indisputable, I'm obviously going to welcome any sort of dissenting opinions from my friends here, but the Chargers were number one. Just everything about them was perfect. Number two, what do you want me to do? You want me to go through the list? Should I go 6-2 since we know the Chargers are number one, or how do you want to do this? You're the boss here, Mitch.
Connor, however you want. You wrote it in order from 1-6, so maybe might as well go that way.
Okay. All right. So number two, I have the Browns. And what I've said about the Browns is I sort of compared it to, whether it's a boy band kind of guy like an Aaron Carter in the 90s dyeing your hair. You can change your hair color, but you can always see the roots, right? And I feel like that is what the Browns have been doing for years, is just kind of trying to dye their hair. But everyone knows that they're the Browns, and there's just not a lot you can do with the color brown. And I think that the one time that they figured it out was, in its inception. Like, yeah, it looks weird, but it looks good with white and orange and in a very basic way. And so I think that to land number two on my list, I think it was smart to just go back to when it was clean, functional, simple, and not trying to distract people from the fact that, your main primary color is brown. You just got to embrace that.
I just want to say, as a proud graduate of Lehigh University and owner of many brown t-shirts and other athletic articles of clothing, just tread carefully over there, Connor, because brown can be a nice color. The brown and white, sometimes that's a classic look. That's all I'll say.
Brown, white, and gold, right? Is Lehigh?
It's mostly brown and white, but there's some gold in the football uniforms, yeah.
I used to have a really great Lehigh Engineers sweatshirt. They're the Engineers, right? Are they like the Mountain Hawks or Mountain Eagles? Yeah,
formerly the Engineers, and then in the 90s became the Mountain Hawks.
Yes, okay. Yeah, so I used to have a really good Engineers sweatshirt when I was little. That was a good
That's a
good
weird name change.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you had been the mascot when they were the Engineers, what would that have looked like?
I think it was a guy, one of the sort of like the Notre Dame leprechauns, where it's a human mascot in a suit and everyone knows it's a human, as opposed to like the Duke Blue Devil, where it's a costume that looks like a being. I think it was sort of a guy with overalls and the horn kind of thing and an Engineer's hat. I think it was that kind of route. Not as great as the very fierce Mountain Hawk bird named Clutch, which is, we can all agree, a much better mascot.
Why'd they change it? Was it just because the Engineer wasn't fierce enough?
No, I think they were, they didn't want to be pigeonholed as just an engineering school, and they wanted to sort of get away from that and not have people think that, they offer other, they have a wonderful journalism program, as both I and CJ McCollum can attest. And I think they didn't want people thinking that they were just an engineering school.
Wow. So my mother went to Illinois Institute of Technology. She was a chemical engineering major. And I early on learned their fight song. It was kind of like a joke in our house. And I've since learned that like other engineering type, nerdy type schools use a similar fight song. And I'm curious if maybe there are roots of this with Lehigh, given that they once had a mascot called the Engineers. It was E to the X DX, E to the Y DY, secant, cosine, tangent, sine, 3.14159, pi I cube root of 3, fight 'em, IIT.
That is amazing.
Wow. That's like a complicated one to memorize too.
Why didn't I go to school there? Well, I definitely would not have been able to get in, but
I would have had no shot of getting in there.
I've since heard this at a couple other schools and I'm not sure where, but this was like a part of my childhood that really evidently stuck with me.
That sounds a little bit familiar. I've never learned the words to that song. I feel like maybe that's a chant that I've heard from like a pep band or a marching band or something. I will ask a friend of mine who was in the band and see if he's familiar with that cheer because it's great. Possible. But I don't know if it's that exactly. But that was great. And I look forward to chopping out that clip of that of this podcast and having you singing that forever to share on multiple platforms.
My mother will be so proud.
A stirring rendition.
Thank you, Albert.
Let's see, Connor, we got lost. We were in the middle of a list and then we were talking about Cleveland. It was a good tangent. Jenny, see what I did there?
All right.
Connor, you want to go back to your list?
Okay, so number three is sort of my big shocker, I guess. And I think that this will probably elicit the most spirited feedback. But for number three, I had the Rams. I liked the Rams uniforms. I thought that it was just the right amount of gradient. On the Weak Side podcast, I described it to Jenny as, you know, in Chopped, you always have to be very careful about how much truffle oil you use. Too much truffle oil just ruins the dish. And just the right amount can improve it by a great amount. And I think that they just had just the right amount of gradient. So I think that compliment the Rams on that, not only because of the gradient, but also just the insane amount of work that went into this. I mean, they built their own website. There was all these explanations for it. I felt more in the know about their uniform change than any team in modern history.
There was an extensive explanation about the new color of bone.
Bone.
Okay, so I will say that I didn't like them when I first saw them, and they sort of grew on me for one reason or another over the course of Wednesday. I just think the Rams are one of those teams where, like, the Browns did the right thing going back to their roots. The Rams had such a classic look, and you could have gone with either of them. Like, you could have gone with like the Roman Gabriel, like blue and white. You could have gone with the Eric Dickerson, blue and yellow, like. And I just don't know why you're overcomplicating this. Just go back to what worked for you, you know? And I thought, I don't know. I just thought this was overcomplicating it. And like, other than like, to me, like the problem's the numbers. The numbers to me, when I saw the way that they shined in it, like they sort of look like cheap stickers, don't they?
Yeah, I also got hung up on the numbers. Didn't really like the font. I didn't really like the gradient. And I agree, there were different parts of them that were shiny. Other than that, I was fine with the uniforms. But I think Connor referenced earlier, like the idea of like frosted tips on hair. Is that what you were getting at with like some of the 90s hairstyles? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this felt like that. Like it was just trying to be a little bit too cool.
You know what else is interesting? Have you guys seen Eric Dickerson's comments?
I have not.
A little bit. I saw the headline, but didn't click.
He said that the helmet looked like two bananas, right?
Yeah. He said, here's Jenny, you'll really enjoy this. This is football. This ain't nothing to do with surfing. This ain't nothing to do with waves. This is football. This is a man's sport. And to me, it just looks soft. It don't look like football. It don't look hard.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
Lots to unpack.
Yeah. I feel like Eric Dickerson has become like Joe Namath on steroids.
Ah, that's a good analogy.
Is that just fair?
Hypercritical.
Like he's like the legend that's like hanging around. And like when he's around, I'm sure everyone like in the team's front office gets really nervous. Like, oh, like we can't really control him because he's a legend. but he also could go off and say something way out of left field. And like, it, you guys covered the Jets. It was, I'm sure it was like that with Namath for a lot of those years, right? Like where, like whenever he comes around, like everybody's a little, like the team, people who work for the team are probably a little nervous about what he might say, right?
Yeah, there were a couple years I think that were worse than others, and then it got a little bit better. But yeah, I think there's definitely that. So I think sometimes it's easy too then to settle into that role and basically be kind of the pushback on everything that comes out. But certainly uniforms engender a lot of debate as it is. But yeah, I mean, I was kind of, I could see the surfing comments, you know, could have done without the gender stereotypes, but the surfing part, I was with him until took a little bit of a left turn there.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I just thought like, yeah, it's just interesting how this legend role now exists where, again, like I think the Rams are probably pretty nervous anytime Eric rolls around.
Is he employed by the team in any way, shape, or form?
I thought he was part of the broadcast. Was he doing like the preseason? Or maybe it was like the sideline? I thought he was, but I can't. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Well, you know, that's you got to keep your former players happy. You know, you got to keep them fat and happy. You know,
was Namath employed by the Jets? No, right?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
Okay. So number four, I have the Buccaneers on this list, and you know, my stance has been pretty clear on this from the beginning. It was creamsicle or nothing for me. I think that they missed a giant opportunity. You're going all in anyway on these next 2 years, and you can change your uniforms after that, but why not go all in with the most Buccaneers thing possible, you know? And just going back to the Gruden era one seemed to me like a little bit of a cop-out. I don't know. There was just a laziness factor there for me, I guess.
Do you think Tom Brady said he didn't look good in peach and he didn't really want to go that route? Always a possibility.
Well, I mean, he didn't officially, obviously they've been planning these jerseys for a while and there's, he would never tamper. It's not like he was talking to the Bucks early. So how would he even have a forum to be able to make his opinion known on the jerseys, you know, until the legal tampering window opened? That was the first time he had ever spoken to Bruce Arians. Right.
Tom Brady doing something backhanded and illegal. Come on, guys. Are you serious? No way.
I don't know about you guys, but I wasn't expecting this level of intrigue as we went through the uniform ranking.
I was just kidding, but you know, I mean, I actually would think that he would look pretty good in the creamsicles, but maybe that wasn't his personal preference. But yes, all, of course, you know, they've been in the works for a while.
I'm far enough down this rabbit hole where I'm loving it. This is, you know, I'm like a pig and you know what? This podcast is already caked in good conspiracy theories.
Like a pig in a new Falcons uniform, Connor? Is that what you're trying to
That's good. So we can skip five then. I mean, we can get right to Falcons if we want. Five is the Patriots. And, you know, I put them down low for the same reasons really with the Bucs is that they even admitted that it was basically just adopting their color rush uniforms because the fans really liked them. But if you go back, I mean, the Patriots had so many good historical uniforms to draw from. There was like the Bledsoe era royal blue ones with the giant Patriots on the shoulder. And, you know, going back to the 60s, they had helmets with the tricolored, you know, Colonial Army hats and stuff like that on them in the jersey numbers. And so I think there was a lot they could have done maybe to refresh the brand post Brady and to say this is a new direction that we're going in. But I think they kind of copped out on that. But yeah, six is Falcons. I mean, that thing is just awful. That is gradient vomit to a level that, and you know what it is? You know, ridiculous, like 80% of the roster is going to look in that, you know what I mean? It's not doing it for me.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. That was one that like over that day, it didn't grow on me. It like looked worse at the end of the day than when I first looked at it.
It looks worse every time I look at it.
Yeah. Like it's like, it like was bad to begin with and it's like progressively gotten worse. And like Connor, the Falcons have good options in their history too, don't they? Like the old Deion Sanders uniforms with the silver pants. You can go back before that when they had the red jerseys. Those weren't bad looking. Like the Falcons had plenty of good options. I just, it was almost like they like just handed the keys over to Nike and just said, bring us something back. And there was no like, there were like, I don't know. Like, I always wonder with these things, like how somebody didn't like somewhere along the way say, wait a second, what are we doing here? Like how many people this probably had to go through, like where someone didn't raise their hand and say, we probably shouldn't do this, guys.
Very surprising. Yeah. I've often wondered, I would love to sit and have sat in that board meeting. And it just feels like Nike had their plate full and the intern got this one, you know, and not that there's anything wrong with, you know, sometimes the intern rises, you know, and ends up doing good things. But in this case, I think it's probably an intern that's not destined for fashion design. That's
and they just look too much like a fake uniform. And we've talked about so many movies. Like, this is a football movie uniform when you just need a generic, let's just put some letters and bold numbers. And, you know, it's, yeah. Just
come to think of it, it's like there are some like elements of the Miami Sharks in those uniforms. The Miami Sharks uniforms were better looking than this because they had like the Steelers numbers and stuff. But there are some elements of it, like with the solid black, like, There definitely like some Any Given Sunday vibes there.
I gotta go back real quick. I think the Patriots got slighted here. I think 5 is pretty low. I mean, this will be the debate in many power rankings this year. The Patriots blow the Bucks, but in the uniform power ranking, I would have put the Patriots number 3, Connor.
Mm. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to plant my flag for the Rams design team. I feel good on that island. I'm inspired by your Danny Dimes courageousness during last year's draft, and I'm okay to stand alone here. I feel okay about it.
Did we miss the Colts? The Colts did have an update.
I considered that too. Minor. It was like a secondary logo, which apparently they stole from a high school.
It's the numbers too.
In the numbers, I did not consider that to be a full scale uniform change. So I thought it was on the list.
The greatest sort of slight of all. They didn't even make the list, yeah. Connor. we are gonna have some angry Colts fans who chime in on Twitter, and you can just tell them. Well, then guess what? You're last.
I actually like their update. Like, I thought those like they're like the Johnny Unitas era numbers. Like, I sort of like their update. I kept when I did mine in my column, I did 5. Like, I kept the Patriots and the Colts out of it because I've considered those updates. But I sort of like what the Colts did, tweaking the numbers like that.
Yeah, it's fine. I would say that they get points taken off for literally stealing the logo from some poor high school.
I haven't heard of it. Read that? You're gonna need to pass that along because I haven't seen that. But that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's unproven. It's this. The C with the horseshoe shape cut out in the middle, which I could see how two different groups independently come up with that. But it also, I mean, it didn't look great when it first came out.
So you've given them a DQ, Connor. They're disqualified.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to put it.
Add that to the bottom of your rankings tomorrow. Really stir the pot.
Really get in there. Yeah.
This makes me want to DQ teams from our actual power rankings, just fan bases that piss us off. Just say, well, next week you're not ranked at all then. Get over it.
Ooh, that would be good.
People would be very upset.
I would love to see you, Connor, is DQing every week.
Well, you know what? In full disclosure, you know, Mitch has been editing my power rankings this year. And so, if we're being totally honest with ourselves, I don't know how comfortable I would feel disqualifying anybody because, you know, I don't know what's going to end up on the finished product. I'm sending something in and it's ending up, it's going through an editing process, you know, and so I don't know.
That would have been a good week for us to do this podcast. It's the issue is that when Connor is fully aware that when we do an anonymous poll, his rankings affect the entire group. And if you're just going to lob a total grenade out there, you can't just do it anonymously. So the last time we did power rankings, we then had everyone defend some of their unpopular opinions. If that becomes a regular feature, then I am okay with Connor and his brand of mayhem sort of, torpedoing certain teams. We can talk about that as it goes. But I thought we handled it well with some slight tweaks where you were a little bit over the top and then having you defend some of your other picks. I stand by.
I'm more than comfortable saying that I had the Saints at 16. That was the conversation. We're at number 16.
And next time I need you to write the blurb that goes with it, Connor.
And the Bills at number 3. And I got to go on the Bills I went on the Bills' in-house radio show to take a victory lap on that. I am now the king of Bills fans. So
nice.
Feels good.
Making friends.
That's what it's all about.
All right. Anyone else? Any last words on uniforms or anything else that they wrote this week? Or do we want to do our one good thing and hop on out of here?
That sounds good, Mitch.
Yeah, right, hopping on out of here.
It's Friday. Everyone wants to go enjoy their weekend, even though the days all run together and we're really just enjoying it as much as we can these days. Let's see. Connor, you want to go first? You have your... Now I'm saving Jenny for last because I know what she's going to talk about. Connor, do you have one good thing for this week?
Sure. So I went on a run yesterday, and during that, I came across kind of a fun little program that our neighborhood police and firefighters are doing, which is if you make a small donation, which I believe goes to help COVID-19 patients, or it goes to the hospital or the first line of response workers, you make a small little donation and they'll drive by your kid's birthday with full siren police and fire trucks. And they'll bring the whole armada out there. And so, you know, the little kids love that. They get super fired up about the horns and the sirens. And then what they'll do is they'll have a meetup points that all the little kids' friends and their parents can get in their cars and then file in behind the fire trucks. And then they can wave at their friend and tell them happy birthday. So I saw that in person yesterday, which is pretty cool. It was the little kids seemed very excited, so I was very happy for him.
Nice. I like that. All right, Albert, how about you?
So, like, because I pretty much spend 24 hours a day with my kids now, I think all of mine sort of involve them. you know, as you guys know, I've got a 5-year-old boy, a 3-year-old boy, and a 9-month-old girl, and as I know is the case with a lot of brothers, they are not always the nicest to each other. But one of the things that's been cool over the last couple of months is you sort of see them bonding because they really don't have anybody else to hang out with other than each other. And so, you know, like Steven has learned over this time to ride a bike without training wheels. And in turn, Drew's got now the bike with training wheels. And so Steven get real competitive with Drew and, you know, ride past him and push him off the trail and all this different stuff, again, because they're competitive with each other. And so today we were out there around lunchtime, and Steve always lets Drew get a lead on him so he can just fly right by him. So Drew gets going out in front, and Drew hits like a ditch and like kind of like falls off of his bike. He was fine. Wasn't a big deal. But Steve comes riding up, and I thought he was going to just blow right by him laughing or whatever. And instead of blowing right by him laughing, he stops and helps his little brother up and puts him back on his bike and sends him on his way, which was a big victory for me and Emily. So that's my one good thing today.
Oh, that's nice.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Great story. All right. Jenny, one good thing from you?
So I take a nightly walk in the park. Usually I do a little loop, but it's about a mile off some of the paths. And I was nearing the end of my loop. It was probably, I don't know, 5-6 days ago. And in the park, there's the big loop that goes around, but then there's different parts that kind of cut off the loop. And so there's a transverse that right underneath the North Woods. So I was coming around that way. And as I was turning the corner, I saw somebody I recognized. And it was somebody I have not met in person, but I have seen her in Mitch's photos and Instagram story. It's his wife, Sam. And so I see Sam turning the corner, even though, you know, we were both wearing masks, or, you know, I could tell it was Sam, but I had like a mask over half my face and I had a hat on and I had no idea. I think I had one of those snoods around my neck too. And I was like, she's going to have no idea who this crazy person is coming up to her to say hello. And she was running and I was walking. So I didn't want to like jump out at her wearing my mask, but it was kind of neat because I got to sort of meet Mitch's wife in person from a social distance in the park. And it was a nice reminder that the world is small. Mitch lives in a building across a parking lot. We're kind of in the same complex. But it was still like a totally random moment that she would be out at the same time I would be out and our paths would literally cross. So yeah, that was my one nice thing. Sam and I passed in the park briefly.
Yeah, your text to me after was funny because, I mean, it was very clear. It's hard and like headphones in and masks on. That's a tough way to introduce yourself to someone who you've never met before. But it was pretty funny. And I was like, yes, I can confirm she is out running. So you probably did see her. And then I told Sam when she got home, I was like, Jenny Ferentis saw you, but we had no way of confirming because like she didn't see you. So we couldn't confirm it, but I guess it was still exciting. We have so little contact with other people that even someone you know, seeing someone you know, is like exciting because you can't hang out with people for real. So it was pretty funny.
Exactly.
I don't run into you ever, which is interesting because we do live like one of these days. I feel like I'm going to see you in the park, but that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I know. It is kind of funny. We really live super close. But yeah, so at least I got to see your wife. But yeah, like you said, these days it feels like some form of human interaction when you like pass somebody that you sort of know.
All right. Well, I can give my one good thing. And it was my birthday last week. Not this week, but last Wednesday. You know, I've seen a lot of people the last couple months before me talking about, oh, it's quarantine birthday, whatever. And going in, I thought it was going to be kind of lame, just like a, you know, crappy way to spend your birthday, just another day inside, whatever. But I spend my birthday editing Albert's mailbag, for example. But it was kind of a nice day. It was sort of more nicer than I thought it was, just hearing from a bunch of friends and a lot of people checking in and catching up, as always happens. But maybe it felt like it meant a little more this year because it's been so weird the last couple months. So I had a nice little birthday. And then one of the highlights, I will say, you guys know that I love to eat food, obviously. And my aforementioned wife, Sam, who has now come up multiple times in this podcast, she went and got me a birthday cake. And the bakery around the corner from us, the smallest custom cake they make where they'll write your name on it, is meant for 6 to 8 people. And I didn't have to share my cake with anyone except Sam. So we got a cake for 6 to 8 people all to ourselves. And so that was a nice highlight that, you know, if you can't invite people over to spend a birthday with you, then you get to eat all the cake yourself. So that was a nice little part of my week.
Sorry that you had to edit my mailbag on your birthday.
Yeah, it's okay. It was fine. Otherwise, it was a nice light day. I was hoping for no breaking news, and that did work out. So
Mitch quietly banging us all for not celebrating his birthday is really what this is all about.
That's exactly what it was.
No, like, Connor, everyone else texted me. We're all getting the
side eye through Zencastr.
Oh, no. Was I really the only one?
No, I don't think Albert did. I think Jenny sent me an Instagram DM, so I think that might have been it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, dude.
The gram if it helps. I'm off the gram and Facebook.
Are you? Wow. Yeah. Yeah, totally off the grid. Honestly, good for you. You're just on the MMQB.
How much of the cake did you get through, Mitch?
Oh, we ate the whole cake. Not at once, but you know, over the course of the week, we certainly no cake's gonna go to waste in my house.
Because M's birthday was on Monday and we wound up throwing it out. I was actually mad at her last night because like I was sort of like planning on working my way through it all week. And then I found out she threw it out. She's like, you can't keep a cake for 6 or 7 days just sitting down. I'm like, why not? Like, I'm more than happy to kind of keep picking away at it. So
yeah, we got through it in about 5 days. Yeah.
If you cover it with aluminum foil, and then the move in my family was always to keep it in the oven, but then you just have to remember to take it out before you turn the oven on. But then there's an element of, you know, keep sort of the richness of the cake intact, you know?
Yeah, the move is aluminum foil, and also like not just around the whole outside of the cake, but indented so that the part that's sliced like right up against that part, and then that keeps it fresh. All right. Well, look at this. We've got birthday cake advice for everybody, running tips, Lego ideas, some TV recommendations, and a little bit of football talk also. Well, this was fun, everybody. Thanks for hopping on. We'll do this again. Hopefully regularly, but depending on some other things, I know sometimes other shows on our feed get moved around, but people are welcome to send in feedback. If you enjoy this show, let us know. And that's definitely the number one reason we would keep doing it more is if our listeners are enjoying it. So let us know what you think. And Connor, Albert, Jenny, thanks everyone for hopping on, and we'll do this again soon.